Hi, Cherie. Thanks so much for joining me today. It's a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Hi, Nadia. Thank you for having me.
Of course, no problem. So, firstly, I'd love you to tell us a little bit more about yourself and your journey and kind of what made you move into this profession that you're in.
Of course. So I studied psychosocial sciences and then I did a master's in psychology. And the first placement I got as an assistant psychologist was in addiction treatment and in a clinical drug and alcohol service in Northwest London. And I learned there that there were so many approaches that were being used to help addicts to completely transform their lives that I felt the general population could really do with when it came to changing habits. And that was proven to me because I had so many habits I wanted to change and had struggled so much and parted with so much money and become really disillusioned, especially when it came to my eating habits. You know, I was trapped in a cycle of binging and restricting and being really mean to myself and my body and having really low self-esteem. And I had just never kind of, I had never found something that had truly helped me in a sustainable and meaningful way until I came across what was being used in addiction recovery, both in terms of practitioners, but also people who were in recovery themselves became real inspirations to me. And then a journalist who I'd met a few times in the past because we had a mutual friend, but we didn't really know much about each other. She contacted me and said, I hear that you've been putting on these workshops at the School of Life about habit change, and I'd like to manage the way I'm drinking, and I would write a piece about it. I didn't know when the piece was coming out. I didn't know what it was going to look like. Truth be told, I forgot about the piece really when we met up. And we just started talking about her drinking. And I applied the same thinking to helping her with her to manage her alcohol intake as I had helping me change my relationship around food and identify the times when I was doing it because I was genuinely, I was eating or binging or not binging. I was binging because I wanted to distract or numb out or deal with a discomfort that I wasn't dealing with. And other times when I was eating because, you know, food is delicious and I wanted to love it again. And I applied the same thinking to her relationship with alcohol. And then she wrote an article, which led to me being contacted by a book agent. And the kindness method came out of that. So that's how it all happened.
That's so interesting. And that's so organic, the way that happened. And it actually makes it so much more achievable when it's more of a conversation. So that leads nicely into your first book, The Kindness Method. So I'd love for us to share a little bit with listeners about the book and kind of the themes behind it.
Absolutely. The book is a handover of things that I found helpful when it came to habit change and that I saw be helpful when it came to habit change. And it really is a framework that I encourage people to adapt and use in whatever way suits them. It's a set of exercises, written exercises with intros where you sit down and you gain a bit more awareness as to why you haven't been able to change. Self-belief, you start, you know, reflecting on the things you have managed to do that are actually a lot harder than what you're trying to do now. And self-compassion, realizing that being nicer to yourself actually gets things done, which I think for a lot of people is a real shift because we often think, you know, if I beat myself up about this, then that will put a stick up my, you know, whatever. it'll make me do what I need to do. And actually, I believe that being nicer to ourselves, speaking to ourselves the way we would speak to a loved one, is actually what can help us sustain motivation to make changes. So it's all around that. And it essentially, what I wanted it to do was just hand something over that people could just keep using over and over again as unwanted habits in their lives, and to kind of empower people with those tools so that I guess they wouldn't need to come to people like me.
Yeah. And actually, what I really love about the kindness method is it feels like a toolkit that I can kind of pick up and use when I need to. And that whole shift in mindset around being kinder to yourself when you're going through positive changes is really interesting to me. And it leads on to my next question, which was kind of like, why are we so hard on ourselves when we're trying to make positive changes? What do you think the reason for that is?
I think a lot of the time, when it comes to that embarking on a plan, we are fed up. There are negatives. There are ways that that we're actually unhappy with our habits. And I think a lot of the time we focus on those things and hope that knowing how bad things have got or how unhappy we are about our habits is enough to spur us on. But actually, I think what we do there is we deprive ourselves of an opportunity to understand why we're finding it hard, why we adopted the unwanted habits in the first place, and where we're starting from, honestly, when we focus only on the negatives. And I think a lot of the time what we can do, particularly if the habit we want to change is a coping strategy for something, is take a more forgiving and understanding and compassionate view at it, look at it, and actually think, what else could do this job for me? And actually look at the habit that's now a problem as a solution. And that way we gain a lot more insight than beating ourselves up about the negatives. But I think it is natural. We often think like, right, when things get really bad, then I'll change.
Yeah.
And then knowing what's bad about my habits is what will keep me going. It makes sense. But I think, you know, being mean to ourselves might get us going. But I think if we want to keep going for the long haul, kindness and self-awareness and compassionate curiosity about where those habits have come from is the ticket.
Oh, I like that last part, like the curiosity of where they've actually come from. And I'm your classic example. Like, I'm getting married in a few months. Well, I was meant to be getting married last weekend, but we won't go into that. And yeah, and I was like, right, that's it. I need to, you know, put my eating habits in check. I need to do X, Y, and Z to get in the dress and all this. And then you become really critical of yourself and really negative. And that's not a place where I wanted it to come from. So, I mean, that kind of does feed into the question that I had around why you think habits are so difficult to change.
I think a lot of time they are serving a purpose still. And we haven't found something else to serve that purpose that we're happier with. So it may well be the case that the habit you're engaging in helps you punctuate the end of the day, or helps you deal with stress, or helps you deal with day-to-day anxiety, etc., at least in the short term.
Do you mean the type of thing like, you know, you might be looking forward to a glass of wine or a night out with your friends in the evening because you've had a really stressful day? Is it those type of daily connections?
Yeah, exactly. And we have associations with them, and they are relationships. Mm. I think a lot of the time people think that when things have gone bad again and the negatives have outweighed the positives, that it's easy to change. Because we don't like the byproducts of those behaviors, for example, but we underestimate the relationship we have with them and that we formed with them. It is like a friendship a lot of the time that we need to be gentle with and expect to be difficult. But a lot of the time we think, well, it isn't serving me anymore, so this should be a lot easier.
Yeah, actually, that leads on to a question that a listener actually sent in. Is it harder to change habits when your social circle is linked to those habits? So, for example, going out drinking or good meals, does that make it harder for an individual to kind of shift their habits?
Yes, I think it can do, particularly in the initial stages of change. That said, and I'm sure lots of people from lots of different schools of thought, which are very correct and worthy as well, would disagree with me. But my approach is one that promotes, where possible and where safe, that you don't feel like you're having to deprive yourself of things that you enjoy mm-hmm. in order to change your habits long term or keep them changed. So people will say to me, oh, well, you know, if I want to stay on track with this new plan of eating, then I can't possibly go with my friends and eat pizza, whatever they're trying to avoid. And I kind of say, well, no, I think you feeling that you can enjoy that pizza and come away from it and feel empowered and actually go back to whatever plan of change best suits you, and demonstrating your capacity to do that, I think is what we deserve to be able to see we can do.
I love that.
So a lot of the time, I don't think we should be alienating ourselves or isolating ourselves. Don't get me wrong. Again, there will be people who are like, ooh, in the first month of change, there's no way I'm going near a pub or whatever else, which is absolutely fine as well. But in the end, I want people to feel like they can communicate their needs to their friends, be open and vulnerable. And I think more and more, maybe I'm living in a bubble, but I'm sure I am technologically, but I feel like people are getting more on board with saying, you know what, you do you. Like, do whatever works
yeah.
for you.
And it's so hard because I think often people think, oh, well, if I change the way I am, then my friends might see me differently because that's how our friendship's been formed. But they're your friends, you know, they're the ones who are going to support you through it. And I really like that you can still focus on being able to do the things you love doing, but potentially in moderation and not having that guilt factor.
Yeah. And pizza's delicious, I randomly hollered.
Yeah, exactly. I like, we'll use the pizza example. For listeners that are listening at the moment, are there any quick tips you might be able to give them about how to change their habits if they're looking to start now?
If they're looking to start right now, I would say the first thing you can do is assume that you already know what you want to do and how you want to do it. Because I think a lot of us, that isn't the issue. The planning isn't the issue. It's the staying on track and reminding yourself that it matters 2 hours after you made the plan and 5 hours after you made the plan and after someone from work sends you an email that really annoys you, or you don't have all the things you thought you needed to prepare to implement your plan or whatever else. What I find really helps is when you wake up in the morning, spend just 5 minutes writing down the things that you guess are going to make you want to go off track with your plan. Things you say to yourself, justifications you might make, excuses, the rain, maybe you didn't sleep well. You know, they're all legitimate things, but a lot of the time they're things that the next day we wish we hadn't allowed to derail us. And often we can guess these things preemptively, and there's something wonderfully smug about being able to go, oh, I guess this would happen. I knew this would happen. And there's an element of sort of mindfulness, I think, that comes with that moment where you realize that you guessed it and that it's predictable and that you're just a human with triggers and responses, and that you can choose to create a space between wanting to do something and actually doing it. And that, I think, can be enormously helpful and help a lot with impulse control, simply preempting it. You're not going to take the trigger away. I mean, long term, it can help in terms of becoming more aware of them and putting things in place that might help you deal with them in the first place. But in the first instance, expect it to be difficult, expect your motivation to waver throughout the day, and try to hand your decisions over to that version of you that wrote that thing in the notebook in the morning and wanted you to see the day through.
Yeah, because it's so easy, isn't it, to just throw in the towel and go, oh no, I had no sleep because of the puppy or whatever it is that you've had, and then you kind of forget all that hard work you put into it. You're so right in the sense that it's all about that longevity and how you kind of proof yourself against those moments when you feel like you will go off track.
Absolutely. And I think just guessing it sometimes is more than enough, because we recognize that this particular challenge is going to continue presenting itself over and over again throughout our lives. So is it going to be, do we want to change our normal response to it, or the one that we find usual? And is there any way to do it other than to actually do it?
Yeah, no, you're so right. It's so true. One thing I'd love to ask you is, what does kindness mean to you?
Well, kindness in itself, I think, is, you know, being generous, being helpful, being forgiving, caring. And I think kindness towards oneself in the context of habit change, I think, is just simply making the same decisions for ourselves that we would want our loved ones to make for themselves. Because often that doesn't mean doing exactly what we want to do exactly when we want to do it. It often means taking the advice we would give someone else, which tends to be the decision that they'll be happy they made tomorrow, that has their overall well-being in mind. And so and also speaking to ourselves the way that we would speak to a loved one if they needed a pep talk and they'd fallen off track with a plan, and treating our bodies every day with the care that we would want the people we love to treat their bodies. And I think these things together can contribute to the things we need to change habits, like impulse control, like debunking all or nothing thinking, you know, that whole I've blown it, I'll start on Monday. There's no way we would tell a loved one if they had a small blip from a plan on Tuesday, oh, you've blown it, you might as well start on Monday.
Yeah, so true.
So it isn't just about do whatever you want whenever you want. It's about taking the common sense advice that you would give someone else and hope that they would take. So kindness for me is that.
That's really nice. I really like that interpretation. Okay, so I've got a listener's question based around the kindness method, and then we'll move on to some other bits and bobs. So
when reading your book, you seem so positive and confident. Do you ever experience downtime still?
Oh my God, yes. Oh yes, 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 yes. There are people who will read my book who are way ahead of the game. yes, I have all sorts of, you know, the thing is, we're all a work in progress. And I think one of the mistakes I made before with self-help books or workshops, or whatever, was that there was this idea that one day I would be fixed.
Yeah.
And all that did was reinforce this idea that I needed fixing. Which really wore down on my self-esteem. And I think what I'm trying to do more and more is just be honest with people about the reality of things. Yes, I suffer with anxiety. I worry all the time, but I do the work. And so it's nowhere near as difficult as it was 3 years ago. And if I continue to do the work and take care of myself and practice what I preach, then I know that it won't be as difficult in 3 years. And I see the progress there. And yes, I could have never written that book a few years ago. And I am in a much, much better place than I've ever been in my life. But I think part of it is not putting myself under pressure. Like, for example, I've written a book called The Last Diet about weight management. And I say in the book, look, my weight is going to fluctuate my whole life. This is not a pressure I want to put on myself. All I'm saying is that I have the tools to gain insight into why it has and to manage it in a way that suits me. And with anxiety as well, just a couple of weeks ago, I didn't get a handbook on how to deal with a pandemic either.
Yeah.
And so I think I try really hard when I say that I want to hand over tools to do just that. I don't profess to be to have everything cracked. And to be honest with you, it's the people who do that I don't really trust.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there.
I just want to kind of keep it real and be honest with people. The tools work. People who have been around me my entire life can't believe how much I've changed in terms of how much nicer I am to myself, how I can manage my own habits, how much more boundaried I am, how much more self-respect I have, how I manage my anxiety, impulse control, all of these things. I have transformed in a lot of ways, but only from where I was starting, which was really, really anxious and really, really, really hoping on myself. So we're all on a different, I can't bear the word journey, but if I was someone who used that word, then that might be the word that I would use.
Yeah. I was thinking that. I used journey at the beginning and was like, oh, how was your journey?
You know what? It makes sense. I think it's just when you work in a certain, there are these things that just you end up banding them around. You know what? They make sense and they're correct, like your truth and stuff like that. But sometimes I hear myself saying it. Me of 10 years ago is like, what are you saying?
Who are you?
Who even are you right now? Yeah. So, my response is, yes, I am more confident than I've ever been before. And I'm happier than I've ever been before. But that's just from where I was starting. And I will go up and down. And I certainly don't want me or anyone else to put themselves under this pressure where they assume that they needed fixing and now they're fixed. And then they become disillusioned, because that's what got me into the mess in the first place.
Yeah, it is so true though, isn't it? It's just, I find it crazy how we always think we need fixing. I think that's why your books are so accessible, to be fair, because you have firsthand experience of some of these things, and I don't find them preachy. I find them kind of very tailored to your experience and then also helping readers kind of really understand how their habits can be affected.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, we'll move on. I'm really enjoying this, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad. Me too.
Okay, so you touched on your latest book, The Last Diet. So can we dive into that a little bit more and what the book means and why did you specifically choose to focus on diet as the theme?
I believe that going on fad diets actually contributed to me feeling worse physically and emotionally. That said, I do feel better in a lot of ways as a result of having learned to manage my unwanted eating habits and losing weight. So I wanted to find something that I could hand over that felt safe and that people felt that they could make bespoke to their own needs and their own values and their own lives, that wasn't someone prescribing what they should eat to them. I don't tell anyone what to eat or how to go about it. I just give them the tools they need to implement whatever plan they want. And I assume that the readers of my book are not after quick fixes. They're sick and tired of the fad diets as well. So it's the same kind of framework in terms of habit change as in the kindness method, but it's more specifically about food and the binge and restrict cycle that dieting from a young age got me into. And the fact that I never even found a way of eating. I was either being really good or being really bad, which usually meant either eating food in ridiculous amounts that made me feel truly uncomfortable, or eating barely anything, which made me feel also all sorts of crap. So I needed to find a way of eating, and I had to do that. And there weren't any books out there that I found could help me, because a lot of them are so good, but they take you straight to intuitive and mindful eating. And I was a bit too far gone down the genuine eating disorder route. when it came to diets. I didn't even realize it was disordered eating. I just thought, at the time, I just felt like everyone goes on diets, you know, and I wanted to hand something over where people could create a way of eating and manage their eating habits so that they could enjoy food again and also manage their weight, but most importantly, disassociate their value and their ability to enjoy their lives from their weight. And that for me is kind of number one, if I'm honest. It's almost like a condition I put early on in the book, that I actually think it helps us to manage our eating habits when we learn to care about ourselves regardless of our weight in every possible way, which was a real, I know there will be people who can't believe that that was even a problem for me, but that was absolutely hugely life-changing realization to me.
Yeah. I'm definitely one of those people that has always struggled with kind of weight and self-image. And I think doesn't really matter sometimes what size I actually am. It's always there. And I think that's something that's so interesting about the work that you do. It's how do we shift that mindset so that you are comfortable with who you are regardless. Okay, I have another listener's question, and then we'll do the closing question. So it's around habit change and how it can be very daunting. So how can we make changing our habits a little bit more fun and less daunting?
Well, I guess it depends on the habit. But if we look at creating a new habit, I would say I know it's simple, but just put one foot in front of the other and get yourself to a place where it's easy to do it. So if you look at things like addictive tech, I read about a lot, and this idea of imposing friction. So making it easier for yourself to do the things you want to do and harder for yourself to do the things you don't. One example for me is that I kept wanting to stretch because I haven't got the best posture in the world. I kept just wanting to do 10 minutes of stretching, and it just wasn't part of my day. There was just I would just forget, and it would get to the end of the day and I'd be like, oh yeah, I was going to do that stretching thing that I knew was good for me. So what I started doing was putting a yoga mat out in the evening so that it was between me and the kettle.
Nice.
So I would literally have to walk over the yoga mat. And when I wanted to, you know, the opposite of that would be, for example, when I wanted to use Deliveroo less, I didn't just delete the app. I took my credit card details out as well. So again, you're putting speed bumps between you and a thing you're trying to do less of, so that you have moments to sort of catch yourself doing it and think, do I really want to do this? Are there other options? And making it a lot more streamlined to engage in the sorts of habits that you want to be engaging in long term and the associations you want to be building.
That's really nice. And I think especially while we're still a little bit on lockdown, that's really good, especially within the home, because I think you can get very kind of not lazy. I don't like using that word, but think you forget to do certain things because they're not necessarily in your normal routine anymore. So I really like the idea that you can kind of create new habits by putting those roadblocks in for the ones you don't actually want. Mm-hmm. So one thing I'd love to close on is, what's one thing you do on a daily basis that's just a non-negotiable for you?
Oh, I don't look at my phone for the first hour of the day.
Ah.
That slipped at the beginning of the pandemic. I'm not going to lie. I relapsed.
I can imagine.
Because I was like, what the hell is going on? This is unprecedented. But then I realized, you know, very quickly, it's interesting with those kinds of lapses is that sometimes you really normalize the change that you've made and you just assume, oh, this is just how I am now. I just wake up in the morning and I'm not really stressed out. And so quickly after I let that slip was I like, whoa, I remember now. This is not good for me. So since that little lapse, it's become a non-negotiable again. I do not look at my phone for the first hour of the day. It's really important. I don't need to be seeing like Donald Trump and people being mean to each other and, you know, and the people in bikinis on beaches and like all of this stuff later.
Yeah.
It really puts me up. You know, sometimes I wonder, like, imagine if all those things actually came into my bedroom first thing in the morning. That's what I'm imposing on my day.
That would be terrifying.
So yeah, it's that for me is a non-negotiable now, and I didn't realize quite how important it was for me until I lapsed. So there you go, learning curve. Even the lapses are useful. Basically, we're nice to ourselves, We just can't go wrong, in my opinion.
I mean, that's simple. And I think that's brilliant. I think it's one thing we really do forget. So I've loved chatting to you. If anyone listening would love to learn a little bit more about you, where can they go?
I'm on Instagram and Twitter, and I have a website. And I always say this, but with a name like Sheru, you won't have a hard time finding me on the internet.
All right. Well, also, I'll share all the links to your kind of Instagram and pages on the podcast when it gets uploaded. But I've really loved chatting to you. Thanks so much. And you've been really patient with all the tech.
Don't be silly. I think it might have been my fault. So you never know with tech. I feel like everyone just picks up the phone. They're like, I'm sorry. But none of us really know what's going on up there. So.
So true. And also, why are we sorry? Like, I didn't do it.
Exactly.
Oh, well, have a lovely day.
Thank you for having me.